Well, what do you think about the other side? Does it exist? Dr. Brian Weiss with us. We'll talk about miracles happen when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back with you with Dr. Brian Weiss. Brian, do these souls, are they finite? Do we just have a certain amount of them, or they go on forever?
I think that souls go on forever. They're immortal, infinite, and it has to do with the nature of reality. I think that all souls are somewhat connected, too, and that we don't understand this completely yet, but there's sort of an energetic connection between souls, so that at one level we're separate and distinct, and at another level we're kind of all connected also. But we're still working with this sort of comprehension of it.
I've sometimes wondered if our existence right now is really a dream state. That we just, you know, haven't woken up from, who knows what? Possible?
Yeah, that's the very last page of Miracles Happen. This is when this sort of the book works up to this concept that you're talking about now, and it explores what if when we wake up on the other side, we're coming out of a dream. The dream is this earth life. The dream is this, and when we wake up on the other side, there are all of our loved ones and others for all of eternity waiting to greet us. It's almost like taking off a mask, taking off a garment.
But when they do meet us, if they meet us, what do they want?
They just seem to greet us in a loving way. They don't seem to want anything. They just want us to feel loved and part of it all. It sounds almost vague, but it's not. And I know that I wrote this book with my daughter Amy, which was a joy. She's a great a writer, a social worker, and we talked. We would talk about these deep concepts. And I remember reading something that the author Anne Frank wrote about. She wrote about time like a deep pool rather than a fast-flowing river. And I wrote, what if time is indeed more like a lake than a swift stream, having depth instead of flow? Then all of our memories and thoughts and actions, they're stored there, and we can retrieve them. They don't flow away. They're never lost. And we often think of life as a river or something like that, going from one end to another end. It may not be. It may be more circular, more like a pool. And I wrote at the end, when we wake up on the other side, some people have called this bliss, this state that it seems to have existed before and beyond all dimensions, preceding all space, all emptiness, all matter, all forces, all energies, where we come from, this source, this source that we don't even have words to describe. And it really has something to do with love and compassion, our home.
Well, assuming that there is life, let's say, on other planets, intelligent life like ours, I would have to assume that if the soul state, the reincarnated state is real, that they're going through the same thing.
I think, George, that souls are the same no matter where, no matter which universe, no matter where.
We might be processing the same ones.
Exactly. And souls are the same. The bodies may differ greatly, but souls are the same. And what has happened is interesting. Some of these cases, I was reading one from this book earlier, they involve people coming from other planets or other galaxies. There was one place with three suns, the one suns being S-U-N-S, where one woman was talking about, and coming to Earth because this was part of a project going on where life was being created, bodies were being formed, and then missing where she was from because she started reincarnating here. It sort of got caught up in the reincarnational cycle in the Earth, and so would have to be reborn here but couldn't go back to her home before the Earth. And it was caused a great sadness, which disappeared when she was able to understand this whole concept of souls. When you leave the body, you enter into this source energy again, and you can be connected anywhere. It's really fascinating to me that souls probably are all the same, no matter in which universe they exist.
Right,
Right. And we're all learning.
Because they don't have any shape to them, right?
Right, right. It's energy. It's pure consciousness.
You sometimes think, you know, what does a soul look like? It has no look, does it?
No, no, it doesn't. I know that, let's say that your grandmother dies and she's 98 years old and has lost a lot of weight and wasted away. When she may appear to you as is in a spiritual form, and some people see visions or have these visits from the other side, she can appear at age 50 looking in robust health because she takes on that form. But that's not the soul. That's just the form she takes on to let you know that it's her. The soul doesn't have a shape, doesn't have a form. It's pure energy.
Can some souls be evil?
That's a very good question, too. I don't find that, but many religious people do find that. I consider it ignorance, not evil. That Earth is like a one-room schoolhouse. Here we all are together, eighth graders, 12th graders, first graders, and those first graders are going to act up. They're going to be mischievous. They're going to be doing bad things, pulling girls' hair, yeah. But I don't consider that evil. I consider that first graders. It's ignorant. They're not possessed.
They're little pranksters.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not going to be that way when they get to the 12th grade. So I don't consider it evil. I consider it ignorant or young or not developed yet.
But a few will be bad. Maybe a few. You there?
Oh, yeah. I'm
okay.
Listening. I'm just thinking of bad, you know, because that's such a loaded word to me. Yeah. I mean, it's complicated because what if, like, souls don't always reincarnate here. They may be coming from other places, and maybe there were really malevolent cultures and societies. I still think that once a soul realizes that and understands, reaches a level of knowledge where you know that we're here to learn traits of compassion and kindness and nonviolence. This is how we progress. This is how we graduate from this school that we're in. And once you know that, you're not going to continue in the first grade forever. You're going to want to move upwards. You're going to move up and graduate. And so the progress, the evolutionary progress of the soul is towards becoming more loving, more compassionate, wiser, nonviolent, not hating other people, understanding that you have to go past their skin and cultural differences and genetic differences to see that all souls are the same and that we're all connected. When you progress along this evolutionary path of the soul, you're going to become kinder and more compassionate. And I think that's more or less inevitable as the soul goes along. But some people choose to just keep flunking and stay in the first grade, stay in the second grade, and they have the free will to do that, but eventually, they're going to realize that they want to graduate, too.
Brian, where do animals and souls come from in this scheme? I mean, how do they fit in?
Well, animals would have souls, too. And I find that all the time in doing this work that people will recognize animals either from past lives or from pets who had died before. And this is horses, dogs, cats, all animals, because they're conscious beings, too.
Well, could a human have been an animal in a past life?
It's possible. I think we can be all things, but I don't find that humans go back to animals as punishment or anything like that. I find that when you're once a human, you're always a human. You kind of stay in that form because you're learning lessons in this form. So we may have, and we can at any time enter the consciousness. I mean, you need a certain level of skill to do this. The consciousness of an animal to see what that's like, they're evolving to. I don't think we, as punishment, go back to animals, though. At least I don't find that. Now, it could be that it happens, but that when you cross species, you don't remember. So that may be a memory thing, too. But I find that when you're a human, you tend to stay a human.
When do you stop reincarnating, Brian? When is it over?
Yeah, I think that's that graduation thing again, George, is when you've reached a level where you no longer have hatred, prejudice, where you are able to maintain a kind of equanimity. No matter what's happening around you, you're able to detach from outcomes and from judgments of other people and just realize that you're a spiritual being. As that old saying goes, you know, that we're spiritual beings, not human beings. When you reach that level, when you're filled with kindness and compassion and benevolence, that's getting close to graduation.
Well, maybe so.
And it's hard. I mean, other elements go with that. Because when you get to that level of understanding, you become more patient. Little things don't bother you so much. It's hard. I don't have an exit test, but it has to do with where those traits predominate over more negative or violent traits.
Brian, when I was 16, don't ask me how or why, I believed in reincarnation. And I always felt, much like you have, that we stop reincarnating when we reach that certain level of perfection, which some people call heaven.
Right.
And I've always believed that. And, mm-hmm. A murderer, for example, even on this planet right now, you can tell who might be more advanced than those who are not. And somebody who's a crook, a criminal, a murderer, a scumbag on this planet has many more reincarnated lives to go than someone who's a little more enlightened.
Absolutely. I agree with all of that. And if you look at yourself too, George, here you are teaching at a massive level, reaching so many people with concepts that are going to push them along this evolutionary path. And this is a tremendously important position. So, and you don't come upon that. One doesn't come upon that lightly.
No.
You have to have earned that. So when you were 16, you became aware, maybe even earlier, but you certainly were aware by then of this pathway that you've been on. You would have to reach a certain level of enlightenment to understand about reincarnation and where does it end and about heaven, and then to be put into this really very, very important position of teaching millions of people. I look at that, and that's no coincidence to me.
I mean, it was strange how this all developed for me. I mean, I used to read books like Three Magic Words, Magic of Believing, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, Edgar Cayce. I was obsessed with those kinds of books, and they all had messages, Brian, all of
yes.
them, as yours does. And, I would take that with me forever. So what's the difference between free will and destiny?
And those books, by the way, resonated with you because you're already aware.
Yes.
And so that makes absolutely perfect sense to me. And that would be like your destiny. You've earned that. You're on this path. And the key then is to stay close to it. So you didn't go off into some other area, which you could have easily done, politics,
mm-hmm.
something else. You went and became this teacher of millions of people. To me, destiny is that pathway. That's that. Sometimes even before birth, we make certain decisions. We're going to do this. We're going to meet this person at this point in our lives. This meeting will take place. That's destiny. Free will is what happens when those events occur. Say that you plan to meet a person that you might marry, let's just say, when you're 23 years old, and that meeting will take place. That's destiny. But then when the meeting takes place, you say, no, they're too short, they're the wrong religion, they're not wealthy enough, or whatever. That's the free will coming in to get in destiny's way. And that's where meditation can help. It sort of clarifies the destiny points so that you see, oh, yes, that feels right. This is what I should be doing. And that's destiny. Free will is the choices you make when you reach the destiny points.
It's amazing, though, that we do have this free will, this choice. But a lot of people don't take it. They don't run with it, do they?
No, they don't. And then it'll keep coming back to you because you'll reach another decision point and another decision point. And it gets really interesting to me because when I talk with cosmologists and physicists now, they talk about universes or futures being created every time a destiny point, a big decision happens. So that I had decided to write Miracles Happen with Amy. And now we're going along this path, the present, it'll go into the future. I'm on your show. We're talking about these really fascinating topics. But what if I had having free will, I decided, no, I had written 8 books before this. That's enough. I'm not doing another one. I wouldn't be
Right.
talking to you tonight. I'd be off on some other
Tangent.
venture
Yeah.
tangent. Yeah, and that future would also be happening. I think they all happen. This is what the cosmologists tell me. They're all going on because there's an infinity of futures, an infinity of universes. They're bubbling up all the time. This is so much grander and much more magnificent than we can even begin to imagine. And so you can influence which future you're going to encounter by your decisions in the present. And I think our task is to connect to the future which is most favorable to us, that is most consistent with our destiny path, our spiritual progress. And, you know, I can see that you're doing that. That's doing this show, that's reaching these people, going to forums, going to symposia, teaching, teaching, teaching. And that's your...
And maybe destiny. At the same time, I'm still learning.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I am.
All great teachers always say the same thing. I'm still learning.
Yep. What about people when you take them back, when you regress them? You ever stumble across Napoleon or anybody like that?
Not really. That's one of the myths of doing this regression work, is that everyone thinks they were famous, they were Napoleon or Cleopatra. But I don't find that. I find overwhelmingly servants and very common lifetimes, because that's the majority of people. And we don't have all these famous people. And sometimes when you do, it's a kind of distortion that comes up. I remember one time seeing a man who really was in exactly and very clearly describing, he thought he was Napoleon. He was describing a battle that Napoleon, he was able to validate.
He was at Waterloo, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was describing the uniforms and the strategies and all kinds of detail that really did fit. But it turned out he was in Napoleon's army. He was an officer, but not Napoleon. And then he could, as we clarified the regression, he could see that he was 100 yards away, 200 yards away, sometimes a little closer. He had distorted it because of needs in his current life for more power and more authority, that where he became Napoleon. And so the memory was 90% accurate, but 10% not accurate. And once we went deeper, that 10% clarified. And he wasn't Napoleon. He was merely a soldier in Napoleon's army.
Have you ever come across anybody who thought they might have been Jesus? I don't want to be sacrilegious here, but have they?
Yeah, no, that comes up. Because I think that was a very powerful time in the earth. And there are cases in this book and some of the other books I wrote about people, not so much that they thought they were Jesus, but they thought they were there at that time. And some of the descriptions are very similar of that time. And I think that anyone who is around at that time, that really imprinted on their consciousness.
I sure did. Brian, we're going to take some phone calls with you when we come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AIM. And then, of course, next hour, our final hour with you, we'll take full phone calls. Those of you who have been calling and are on hold, I shall get right back to you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM with Dr. Brian Weiss, author of Miracles Happen. Okay, it's that time now to take your phone calls this half hour and all of next hour with Dr. Brian Weiss. We'll get ready to do it when we come right back. Back with you with Dr. Brian Weiss and your phone calls as well. Brian, how long are you going to keep doing this? This is incredible work. You're doing it out of passion. You're not going to stop, are you?
I'm not planning to stop. I enjoy it too much. It's so rewarding to see people healing and understanding and growing and feeling better about grief and grieving, all of these things. It just really so rewarding. I just enjoy doing that. So as long as I can keep doing it, I'll keep doing it.
Some people who live in different areas will say, how can I go to a hypnotherapist? Can you recommend that?
There are many ways of finding hypnotherapists. I don't refer specifically to people anymore. There are so many. I train therapists.
You do?
I do this twice a year up at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. They come from all over the world, so we're kind of seeding therapists in all different countries and cultures, because this is a a global thing. People are interested in knowing more, healing, understanding about past lives and spiritual states. So a good therapist, you can find them on the internet, the same as you would find any other good healer or physician. Look at their credentials, look at their backgrounds, get word of mouth. And many of them will put on that they took my training. Those are people that I know. But it's too hard for me to keep up with everyone now. We've trained.
Sure is. You know, I've never been hypnotized, Brian.
Yeah, I think that you can probably do that naturally. When you meditate, that's so
that's
much
probably
like
what I'm doing.
Exactly.
All right, to the phones we go. Larry in Gainesville, Florida gets us started east of the Rockies. Hey, Larry, thanks for holding.
Hey, George. Thank you, buddy. Listen, I appreciate your service, and I get a feeling in my spirit that you're not too far away from your last.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, there's an understanding about teachers that I have that you'll understand if you read it.
Okay,
Dr. Brian Weiss, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Well, good. Listen, I have been a minister, and the thing that you talked about, when a person has a gift of healing, when they're commanded to lay hands on people and they'll be healed, that energy comes through the minister's body and goes into the seeker's body when they are healed. And your hands get very, very warm. It's an absolute energy. It's not a feeling or anything like that. So what you spoke of is to me, very, very real.
Yes, and many healers say the same thing. They feel the heat, and that's a form of energy. So what you're saying is very true, and I hear this from many cultures too, that when hands-on healing or Reiki, the people have different names for it, but that's a transfer of energies. For example, in Japan, they'll call it Qi. In China, they'll call it Qi. Qigong, Tai Chi. When you hear that, that's the transfer of energies, just what you're talking about.
Some people who practice Qigong, and they're very good at it, have the ability to knock somebody over with just the energy force.
Yeah, it can be
that's
very
amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is something.
It is.
I tried practicing that. I wasn't even able to knock a book off a shelf.
I think that would be like a developed skill.
I gave it my best.
Yeah.
So we can go back in the past sometimes at past lives. What about future lives?
Yeah, I got very interested in that because I was finding that people, some of the people I was seeing could have precognitive dreams. That is, they would dream of things in the future and these events would eventually happen. And so I thought, well, if people can dream about future events and it happens exactly as they were dreaming, why not put people into deeper states and see if we could have the same results? And you can, because the future is really probably parallel. At some level, there is no time. So these events that seem to us to be flowing through time from past to present to future really may be happening simultaneously. And so when you read about or hear about parallel dimensions and these kinds of things, it means beyond time. And so you can go into the future. Same Soul, Many Bodies, that book I wrote, is mostly about progression, going into the future. And it is possible. I don't do it as often because you need a little, how to put it, a level of maturity. Some people just don't want to look into the future and see, oh, there's going to be illness or loss or something negative happening. But really the best way to approach it is it's not causing anything negative to happen. It's just more like an early warning system, an early detection
mm-hmm.
system.
Let's go to Abigail, first-time caller, Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Abigail, you're on with Brian Weiss.
Hello, Dr. Weiss. I just had a question about talking about going into the past through your hypnotherapy.
Okay.
And if you ever go back and find something that, you know, might be unsavory, or if maybe you weren't such a good person in your past life, that can bring out negative sides in you now? Or
yeah, that's a very common anxiety that people have. What if I was a bad person? It doesn't happen that way. Because when you go back and you remember a past life, there's a level of detachment or objectivity where you know that was then. And now you're on this path beyond that. You can correct that. So it'd be like if you went back and remembered when you were in first grade and you did something on the playground and you didn't like it, but you realize, oh, I was young then and now I'm not, and I understand that. So a lot of people are afraid of that, but when you have the experience, you don't label yourself a bad person or an evil person. You just say, oh, I've certainly learned not to do that anymore. It's not as traumatic as you might think.
Well, that's good advice, Dr. Brian Weiss.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's go next to our wild card line in Linwood, Jefferson, Texas. Hi, Linwood. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to make an observation concerning the role of karma when it comes to reincarnation. And earlier I heard you speaking about when you stop reincarnating. I've been made to understand that the Hindus believe that you stop reincarnating when you become karmaless. Like, in other words, like when you are no longer accumulating karma in the physical world. And a lot of people misunderstand what karma is because, you know, they're in, like, cause and effect, what goes around comes around, what you do unto others will be done unto you, which is just a manifestation of karma. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, the law of karma is stated as being every human desire must be fulfilled. So either you banish the desire or fulfill it. There's no in-between. If you still have the energy from desire does not dissipate or go away, as long as you have that desire, you will reincarnate until you either fulfill or banish that desire. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Okay,
thank you.
Go ahead, Brian.
Sure. There's when you look at ancient Hindu tradition, there's a lot, of course, about karma. And just to catch everybody up, karma is often thought of as the result of your actions, of your thoughts, that every action has a reaction, and everything you do and think has an effect. So it is a little bit of cause and effect. And if you do something negative, then that creates negative karma, and you have to work that out. I find that system very strict, of course, and very exact, but I think that love dissolves fear, and that once you sort of reach this level, it could be instantaneous, like in a Zen tradition. So that kind of came along and said, okay, well, this is a way out. You can have a sudden enlightenment. And this happened as Buddhism moved from India to China, and the development of the Chan and then the Zen tradition in Japan, is that this sudden enlightenment was a way out of karma. This sudden understanding was enough to bring an end to the cycle of birth and death and rebirth. And I kind of find that happens more often, that it's not this onerous thing where you just get ground down for 10,000 lifetimes. I find that as you learn about love, that just starts dissolving away karma. And to me now, as I look at it, and again, this is my own thinking, is that karma is not punishment, but karma is an opportunity for learning. That you are presented with this situation to see if you've learned the lesson, to learn the lesson. It's not a punishment. It's this opportunity for learning, opportunity for growth. And as you become a loving and compassionate, kind person, you're going to dissolve away that karma. And then it won't matter if you come back or don't come back because you've transcended that. It doesn't matter. Once it doesn't matter, I think it becomes optional.
Good point. Let's go next to Harry in Fallbrook, California. Hi, Harry. Thanks for calling.
Now, my question is reincarnation real, or when you regress someone, the experience that comes through, was it as a result of one of your ancestors? And the reason why I'm struggling with this is because the Christian Church emphatically denies the existence of reincarnation.
Correct.
Right, and I think that many people believe that, but to me, looking at it just without any emotion and in a detached and objective way, when did the Christian Church emphatically deny reincarnation? And the answer is like around the 6th century, that for 500-some years, the Christian Church debated reincarnation, and there were many church fathers who accepted it, St. Origen and others, and many people think that Jesus in the New Testament was talking about reincarnation when he was asking who John the Baptist was in his prior lifetime. Did they recognize him as Isaiah, Elijah, who lived 900 years before, back again as John the Baptist? So these questions bring up the debate that went on for 500 years about reincarnation in Christianity, when the Romans took it out because they felt without the whip of Judgment Day, people wouldn't listen. So that's politics. And that, when you know the history of it, it takes on a different tone, because that certainly was seriously debated and accepted by many church fathers for five centuries. Now, my approach is the clinical. I'm finding it through my clinical work and working with patients, taking them back. And the first part of your question, can it be genetic, chromosomal? Yes, I suppose it can be in some cases, but in other cases not, because some people have died childless or died as children, never having transmitted any genetic material, not having children, and yet they remember the lifetime as the child who died or the person who died without any children. So there's a great interruption to the genetic transmission, and then you need to understand that it's probably stored in this energy field, as we talked about very early, a few hours ago, the energy field around the body. So everything, if you have an open mind, is open to this sort of understanding. Well, the church really didn't condemn reincarnation or declare it a heresy until the 6th century. And no, there is non-genetic transmission. We go back to people who had no children, so you need some other model to explain it, because sometimes the memories are so exact and so detailed and sometimes historically validated that we need to understand this with an open mind. But that was a very good question, too.
Tell me a little bit about your workshops, Brian, and where can people go?
Well, as you mentioned earlier, the website that I have, brianweiss.com, that will list the workshops that I do. I've begun, and for years I'm doing experiential workshops because I love giving people the opportunity to have these experiences. And you can have regressions in a group. It's very safe. I've been doing that since 1988, when Many Lives, Many Masters came out. And it's the whole list of workshops will be there. I do one-day workshops, weekend workshops, and these five-day professional trainings. You don't have to be a professional to come. About half the people are, and the other half just come because they want intensive experiences. And this book, Miracles Happen, George, this is a collection of the best and most stirring or transformational experiences that people have had in these very same workshops. So we've taken the best stories over the last 20 years, how it affected people, what happened, and I've commented on each story so that people can see how it all fits together. Just as your show is doing tonight, because we're talking about so many of these stories, mm-hmm. cases, and experiences, and tying it all together philosophically, the book does that also for people that aren't listening to your show or who want more detail.
Let's go to Michael driving in Aurora, Colorado. Hey, Michael, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
George, Mr. Rice.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Okay. First off, I want to admit that I fully assume I know absolutely nothing, assuming, you know, that I'm human and all that great stuff. So, but I've come to the conclusion that God has a multiple personality disorder and we are his personas. And I believe that the whole purpose for us being here on Earth is simply the experience, whether we learn, don't learn, that sort of thing. And as far as reincarnation and that such, I believe that we stop reincarnating when we choose not to reincarnate again. We become the avatar, if you will, that we choose to become when we choose to be born into that avatar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure that it's exactly as easy as that. Sometimes it can be, because if you've When people sometimes, we're doing regressions, they die and float above the body and have this life review, there's a whole process that's very similar to the NDE work the near-death experience work. And there are other schools other than the earth where a person can go to for a period of time, a soul can go to and reincarnate there. So there may be some voluntary way that you can say, oh, I'm going to stop reincarnating. But I've had other people who have been on the other side and then get drawn back into a body here, even if they don't want to, because they haven't finished their learning, or there's something more to learn, or they have debts. Debts is another word for the karma that we were just talking about a few minutes ago. And then, even if they don't want to, they're drawn back here because they're not finished yet. So I would say in some subgroup of people, it may not be so optional.
No, not at all. Let's go to Christian in Los Angeles. Hey, Christian, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George. It's probably my umpteenth time that I've called into the show, and I just wanted to relate just two things. First, my mother died when I was a teenager, and she died in 88. That was my first major trauma in life. My mom and I were very close, and something very strange happened. About a week after her memorial service, about a week or so after, to make a long story short, she basically spiritually, her spirit, came back to, you know, to visit me to say goodbye for one last time, because her death had been so sudden and unexpected, and it was just emotionally shocking to me. But she actually physically, I felt her spirit. I was in bed sleeping, and she woke me up, and I could feel her literally just her body caressing, you know, literally against mine. And I could feel her literally her arms wrapped around my back and her squeezing me, giving me a hug. It was her way of saying goodbye. And for many years afterward, occasionally when I'm in bed, I'll feel like maybe somebody is in the room, or I'll feel like, let's say, the mattress is starting to go down a little bit, and it's like you feel like this presence, but you're not sure. My mom is very dear to me. I think of her every day. I miss her so much, and I hope that someday I get to see her. When it's my time to cross over, I get to see her again.
I'm sure that time will come.
Also, another thing I want to relate to is I've always had a fascination with the Titanic, and especially when I was in, like, junior high and high school, I would always, like, when we would have, after class, when we would have some free time or something, I would always keep drawing the same image of the Titanic going down. And a lot of my classmates asked me, God, Christian, you're so fascinated in Titanic. So I've always wondered if, subconsciously, if I may have been. Who knows?
Let's find out from Dr. Brian Weiss when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.